Feature. How old did you say? Understanding vocal age. Defining vocal age. One casting consideration I find seriously misunderstood is the notion of vocal age. Strictly speaking, it is how old you make me think you really credibly are when I hear you speaking but do not see you. On the one hand, employers often see gray hair and think they hear gray hair, not realizing that it's the person's looks that have influenced their perceptions. The same can go for ethnicity. On the other hand, actors often perceive themselves to be castable from age 9 to 90, which may work on stage, but which certainly doesn't on camera, and is limited to the most versatile, on mic. How does this disconnect happen? Well, neither group is dealing honestly with what's actually in front of them vocally. Chronological age does play a part in the sound of our voices, but careful actors will have more longevity before the all but eventual rasp or creakiness sets in. I do know more than a handful of folks in their 90s who sound 45 or 50. And by pitching the voice upward and acting less mature, more innocent or naive, we can just sound younger. But the key words here are how old you make me think you really credibly are. Just like film work demands that we credibly look the age we play, with all the help that makeup and special effects can offer, audiobook work demands that we provide vocal realness. Notice that the voice takes on age characteristics in two major ways. The sound quality itself, the pitch, timbre, and vocal clarity, so we only have but so much control over this part, and in the speaking style, including musicality, speed, and the intonation of emotional expression. If you've taken care of your instrument and are blessed with good vocal genes, good sound quality can keep you in the employment landscape of younger voices. What actors and employers both need to consider is how individuals express themselves across age groups and at different points in history. As a casting director, I find most mature actors, let's say 45 and older, perceive themselves as very versatile, vocally capable of playing a teenager, a child, or a granny, especially when they have a lot of professional acting experience. Yet those same actors often play their idea of a youthful voice. They often lack the emotional range of a younger age group, a realistic reflection of their concerns and feelings. What one has to do is spend time closely, non-judgmentally observing and interacting with kids, teens, and 20 to 30-somethings to see how they communicate, the range of emotions they use, and how they use intonation to express themselves. Frankly speaking, kids from 20 years ago sounded different from those of today, and way different from kids 50 or more years ago. That's because our speech as a cultural phenomenon constantly incorporates new words, idioms, and intonation patterns, while eliminating ones that sound too much like the preceding generation, or that don't seem to fit a current feeling. It's not just the vocabulary that changes. It's how we say what we say, or not say, as the case may be. As the social, political, and technological landscape changes, so does an entire generation's response to it. It is crucial that you learn to walk in shoes vocally the right size, shape, color, and style that fit a given vocal age and time period. Societal factors. Think about some of the things that separate much of the baby boomers from Generation X, born 1964 through 1982, and Generation Y, the millennials, born 1982 to 1998. Millennials grew up communicating at lightning speed via cell phone, email, and more importantly, texting. The latter group is growing up with Facebook and Twitter, where any thought or image can be made public in a matter of seconds, with or without your consent. The latter two generations also grew up with the reality of incurable sexually transmitted diseases and a safe sex imperative. Boomers had the sexual revolution. Starting with Gen X, kids experienced record-high divorce rates, were latchkey kids, and dealt with helicopter parenting. Generational groups encounter and react to political events, i.e. the assassination of a president, September 11th, etc. Financial phenomena, the Great Depression, the greed is good 90s, restricted access to loans. Social phenomena, like AIDS, mobile communication and social networks. Educational trends, a trade school focus versus a college degree competition, to name just a few. All of these produce changes in the generation of youth that experience them, and reactions to phenomena get into the speech patterns of the day, as variable degrees of cynicism or optimism, a sense of familial stability, shame or empowerment, etc. Stereotypes. That is not to say any narrator, regardless of age, should use stereotypical patterns of expression either. There still has to be specificity, honesty, and intimacy vocally released in the narration. That's what makes the difference between simply reading a story aloud, telling a story to someone, and the more actor-centric performing a story. For example, one of the worst habits I encounter from all corners of the globe is the constant upswing mid-phrase and at sentence ends. Younger narrators, teens, 20 and 30-somethings really, use it out of habit. Like using like. I think you get the picture. And it practically defines the speech cadence of Generation X into the millennials. It's that musical upswing that makes everything sound like a question, or like the speaker isn't sure of themselves or what they're saying. Sure, add a dollop for verisimilitude, but beware of crossing the line into caricature. For truthfulness' sake, you may want to include a bit of that as the narrator of a young adult piece, or to add definition to particular characters. The problem is that overusing it in the narration creates a repetitive vocal pattern that undercuts emotional meaning and distracts us, usually creating a droning quality. How's that for a value judgment? It's fine in a 15, 30, or 60-second commercial, but it becomes exposed, pattern-like, and therefore more noticeable in long-form work. Living in the present in the past. It starts to get really interesting when you play a 16-year-old, say, in 1870 or 1945. We don't really know what folks sounded like in the 1870s, but you can be sure that their speech was very different. We know that from the writing of the period. Newspapers, letters, documents, even plays. Thoughts, i.e. sentences, were often longer, the grammar more structured and word choice more proper, at least that of certain classes. And we can research what would have been considered acceptable behavior. Using our contemporary, more colloquial intonation patterns from today would sound out of place in such a setting. You want to reflect period differences in your diction, cadence, and quite possibly pacing. In the case of 1945, we have plenty of examples from old films and radio of speech cadence from all over the world, really. Historical speech is a more accurate description, and I'll cover that in much greater depth in a later issue. For now, download, stream, or check resources out of the library, but remember that the point of doing this work still ultimately serves the storytelling. You may find that you're perfectly true to the speech pattern, but lose your connection to the honest emotions in the text and subtext. As with all projects, the listener stays with you because you create intimacy, share truths about how people feel, and the significance of events. Lose that, and you've lost me, no matter what your age.